Greetings from ISKCON Hartford in Connecticut. I'll speak today from here. A little tough, I find, my traveling. I mentioned before the glories of being in one place for regulation and focus, and the traveling, how it increases the passion, and so many things. Hard to keep health, hard to keep focus, but I think it's certainly worth the sacrifice for preaching Krishna consciousness. Just as in this verse, it mentioned in the purport, all the knowledge that Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami directly acquired from Sri Chaitanya was broadcast all over the world by their expert service. So there's something very, very wonderful in broadcasting and preaching Krishna consciousness. In fact, in Krishnadas Kaviraj's in glorification of before he's going to, the introduction to writing the Madhya and Antyalila would be very confidential subject matter that's going to be discussed. I mentioned several classes, how wonderful that he offers his obeisances. How many obeisances? Koti Namaskar, unlimited obeisances unto the lotus feet of Nityananda Prabhu. Why? Because he's so kind that he spread the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. So whether one is actively working in devotional service or meditating, he's meditating on what? Service. Sevana Bhavana. Vrindavan means the mood of service. Even the Goswamis, they're entering Vrindavan. But as it's introducing the Goswamis, it says Prabhu Agyai. They're going under the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? To prachar. To bhakti karila prachar, for preaching devotional service. And under order for preaching, shastra vichar, the analytic, analyzingly studied the shastras. Why? Sadharma samstapa ko. They did it for hitakarano tribhuvane, to do welfare for others, to establish sadharma samstapa ko, to establish the correct path and the correct activities for the welfare of other people, just like Srinivasacharya prays in that very beautiful verse about the six Goswamis, Chakpaturnam Asesha Mandalapati Trainim Siddha Tuchava Bhutva Dina Ganesha Kau Karunaya Kopina Kantasya Chakpa Turna Mashesh Mandalapati Trainim Siddha. They kicked off all their aristocracy as insignificant. Bhutva Dina Ganesha Kau Karunaya. Why? Bhutva Dina Ganesha, because they're compassionate to all the people of the world who are dina, who are poor, who are suffering. Therefore, the Supreme Lord and his devotees are called dina bandhu. They're the friends of the poor, or dina vatsala. They're very kind to the poor. Not just materially poor, but people who are suffering because they're bereft of Krishna consciousness and spiritual knowledge. So, I'm praying that even though I can't have the same focus, same regulation, the same sadhana, the same study as I have in Vrindavan due to traveling, that I can invoke the mercy of Lord Nityananda, Krishna Das Kaviraj, Srila Prabhupada, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to share this wonderful book, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And one thing I was doing in Vrindavan that I think devotees appreciated very much is I was sharing the realizations of my godbrothers who would visit. Traveling, I'm finding not as many godbrothers as I do when I'm in Vrindavan. But I can tell you something about yesterday. I was in Boston, and I had a very nice program there for a few days. And I did a program last night at the temple. And at the end of the program, my godbrother Pradyumna came in. And Pradyumna is, of course, one of the close associates, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who was his main editor. In fact, this Chaitanya Charitamrita is substantially the effort of Pradyumna Prabhu to translate and help Prabhupada with the translations and the editing. In fact, on the appearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, or was it on Radhastami, I was listening to a lecture on Prabhupada, and he was going on and on about Pradyumna. He called him Panditji, how he helped me so much. And he's very articulate. And articulate means that he can express and conceptualize and express philosophy. So he said some very, very wonderful things, and I thought one of my services as I give this Sangha is not just to speak myself, but when I meet these wonderful Vaishnavas in line from Srila Prabhupada who have their mercy, to share some of the things with you, which they shared with me, the gems of realizations that I am getting in association. Hopefully, I can also distribute to you. And it's so wonderful. So, at one of the programs, this young lady, she was in her 35, she was working at Harvard in administration, and she was also taking courses there and studying some, I forgot which particular subject. So she came. I did a program the night before at the house of Jivan Mukta, some of you know, Nandanandana, Vrindavan Das Thakur, their house. We had a very wonderful program there. And this girl came. She had gotten a Bhagavad Gita from someone distributing Bhagavad Gita in Boston. She looked up the temple, and she's only been coming for 2 weeks. And interestingly enough, her name was Dina. She was from Philadelphia, from an Italian family, and her name was Dina. And she was so pleased when I told her that Dina means poor or humble, because she said, I was meditating today. If I can pray to God for any quality, what quality would I want? She said, I would want humility. And when I was speaking to her, I could see that she was a deeply sincere searcher. And I could understand from speaking to her, it's so clear that our practices of devotion, service, and our jnana samskara and ability for analysis, a lot of times these things are carried on from previous lives. Because she had, so, you know, when you speak to new people, you know, I don't very generally speak directly God and worship God, and, you know, a little bit indirect, because the people have different conceptions and frames of references sometimes that are negative about a personal God. And in fact, even in the Vedas, the personal aspect of God is not so often given. Why? Because people come here on the platform. The whole basis of the material world is false ego, ahankara. I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. And when you present God to them directly, the personal aspect of God, but you're basically telling someone, look, the position that you're aspiring for is already taken eternally. So therefore, to help people in transcendence, generally an impersonal aspect of the absolute truth is presented to help them transcend, because they're, by envy, they're threatened by God. This girl was just a, and then in our conversations, when I started to explain this shikshastra, and I explained the verse Trinada Peace, Nichena, Torora Peace, Hishtana, Amanina, Madanena, Kirtaniya Siddha Hari, that one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, making oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of prestige, of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant constantly. She was crying. She said, this is so beautiful. She really had an appreciation, a very deep appreciation. So when I was explaining this verse, Trinada Peace and Ichena, then presumably he's very shy, but he began to give some very, very wonderful, analysis of this verse. And he said, he says, more humble than a blade of grass. And he gave two analyses of what it means to be more humble than a blade of grass. He said, the size of the soul is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of the hair. He said, so constitute, we are smaller than a blade of grass. But he said another thing is anonymity. There's the blade of grass. When you say a blade of grass, what is a blade of grass? When you say he's more tolerant, he's more lower than a blade of grass. What is grass? When you think of grass, you think of a blade of grass is just one of many. A blade of grass doesn't have any individual significance. It's just one of many, many other blades of grass. There's no distinguishing. So the mood of a Vaishnava, he was explaining, it's very, very nice. He says, the mood of a Vaishnava is, he's just one of many. He's not distinct. He's not significant. He's just one of many of the living entities in relationship. And then he was explaining that this is actually the mood of kirtan. The mood of Sankirtan, why Sankirtan is actually gives greater feelings of bliss than Kirtan, is because Sankirtan gives us the chance for humility, just like a blade of grass. If you look out in the field, there's not a distinguishing, that's a special blade of grass. They're all the same. He said the same sense, when you enter into Kirtan, you have to drop the designation of false ego. That I'm the lead singer, I'm the tremendous madanga player, I'm the great kartal player, I'm the best dancer. You have to be in the mood that just like a blade of grass, I'm just one among many before God. And he said, that is real Sankirtan. if you're doing kirtan and you try to distinguish yourself from others, he said, that's not real Sankirtan. So wonderful to get the association of such souls. And in fact, we sat there, myself with the devotees, and just listened to him for about an hour explaining just so many wonderful things. So I'd like to share that with you. The verse in hand. It's glorifying the books of Sanatana Goswami. And one of the prayers that I always chant in this Sangha is Vairagya Bhakti Rishampiyatnai Apaya Mam Anabipsamandam Kripambuhiya Paraduka Duki Sanatana's Tam Prabham Asriyami. That I take shelter of Raghunath Das Goswami, the Priyojana Acharya, is praying, I take shelter of Sanatan Das Goswami, Vairagya Bhakti, Rishampiyatnai Apaya Mamadam, because although I was unwilling to take Vairagya Bhakti, Bhakti which is enriched with renunciation from this world, even though I was unwilling to take it, he forced me to do so. He was an ocean of mercy. So he's glorifying Sanatana Goswami. And what is he doing? Because Krishnadas Kaviraj is coming after them. He is the Acharya after the six Goswamis. So he's indebted to how they have carried on the message of Krishna in Guru Parampara. He's indebted to them that by their mercy, and their teachings. Because without, what are the six Goswamis? It's described in the previous verse where it was glorifying the Goswamis, Rupa and Sanatan. But what they did, they collected the essence of the scriptures. Because the Vedas are so vast, the concept of the Vedas is, I explained that before, from Om, from the transcendental sound vibration, Om, is both manifest the material world and manifest the knowledge to understand and utilize the material world for the purpose of the material world, which is to become a devotee. So there's so much information in the Vedas because it describes the relevance of everything, even the body, the health, the society, medical, military, gradual progression by karma kanda or fruit of activities. It describes so many things, but the essence of the Vedas is devotional service. But the essence is not explained exactly directly. And even Lord Brahma, when he heard the Vedas from Krishna, Lord Brahma heard the Vedas three times and then came to the conclusion that the essence of religion is devotional service. So the Vedas is very, very vast, gives knowledge on all levels of existence to purify oneself, and therefore the message of devotional service is sometimes confidential or hidden. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, the most confidential knowledge, which is devotional service, is in the middle. So they did this work, and they compiled all the scriptures, and then Krishnadas Kaviraj has access to their authorization of devotional service through the Vedic literatures. And these books that he's mentioning, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is the essence of the Bhagavatam, and then Dasa Tipani, which is his commentary, and then Hari Bhakti Vilas. So he's so indebted, and it shows the very important thing of achieving spiritual perfection. Because spiritual perfection, I'll probably mention this in every class I give, Prabhupada's commentary in Bhagavad Gita on Samaham Sarva Bhuteshu, that the perfectional state of the living entity is called a devotee. The perfectional state is love or praying. There's nothing else in the consciousness but Krishna, Radha Krishna, and your love for them. It's the perfectional stage of life. And it's a change of heart from our present state of consciousness, which is ahankara. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. You come to the point of selflessness from the platform of selfishness. So in devotional service, to develop that heart, and the pure heart of the Brijvasi, the residents of Vrindavan, there are different components of spiritual realization. In other words, the pure heart, the devotional service, first of all, the platform is so clearly dina, or utter humility. Because if you want to serve, you cannot be proud. Proud means I want to be served. So to actually come to the perfectional state, one has to be very in a humble position. So humility and also this the sense of bhakti humility is expressed in other forms of expression and feelings. And here is one, the feeling of gratitude or indebtedness. You can't be what's called a muni in the sense that I want to surpass what is previously spoken. One never puts himself in that mood. He feels so indebted to the teachings and realizations he's gotten in Guru Parampara, and as Krishnadas Kaviraj shows us the heart of the Vaishnava, he's expressing that I am just chewing the remnants So this is the mood of the Vaishnava. And I explain other stories in Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita, how we revere the previous acharyas. I'll give you another example about Pradyumna. I was in a mini academic conference that I organized with some young devotee scholars. And there was a question of Prabhupada's presentation of the Bhagavad Gita and whether it needed to be presented in a more contemporary way. Basically, the conclusion that we came to is that by studying Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the proper way, there's so much confidence that the real teachings of the Bhagavad Gita will be manifest, and that those who are in line from Prabhupada studying the Bhagavad Gita, and these were amongst the devotee scholars, we were all confident that the greatest scholars of the Bhagavad Gita are those who are learning it in Guru Parampara, and especially from Prabhupada's commentary. I'm fully confident of that. I've trained many people in Bhagavad Gita, and you won't find, this is the real jewel, the real secret of our society. You know, we have access to transcendental knowledge, and it's not dogma. We actually know the text as it's being presented. It's so clear. There was also some understanding that there may be supplementary literatures that we write that make the message in a way more contemporary to attract people to study in Parampara from Srila Prabhupada. But while this conversation was going on, I somehow got a call from Pradyumna. And I asked him about this, how you deal with the previous acharyas and their teachings and how you make them contemporary in one sense. But he told an interesting story. In other words, the first thing is, you must be established on a platform of utter gratitude and respect for the Parampara. That's the first platform. So he tried to explain this to me, and he said, Bhakti Siddhanta had one disciple who was very brilliant called Professor Sanyal. And he specifically, Professor Sanyal had Guru Nishtha. And he explained that he once brought Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's, he once brought, oh, that little, I'm getting another call, but obviously I'm not going to answer it. He once got Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, one of his books. It was written in English or something. And he got this book, and he was going to bring it to the publisher. So the publishers and editors over the book and said that this word is wrong. And then Professor Sanyal, he had so much Guru Nishtha, he said, then change the dictionary. the point is that the faculty of faith is the essential component, the precursor to knowledge, and in a proper culture that's given so much respect. It's given so much respect. He said another example is the Bhagavatam. I think he presented that sometimes there was some question about some particular grammar of the Bhagavatam, and he said he read commentaries. They'll never say, this is wrong. They'll say, another way to understanding this thing is this. And in the text, it is said in this way. And then he said, Rishi Uchu. He said, the sages have spoken. So, and I'm not making the comment, because I do believe that in Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, we can present it in interesting ways in our own realization to accommodate the frame of reference of people who may not be comfortable with the language and culture spoken to. And then by presenting that message in that way, attract them to the teachings of Prabhupada so that they may be more inclined to study through the original text. That's kind of clear and interesting. But and then the other example, and I just heard this example this morning, it's very wonderful, is when Ishwar Puri wrote a commentary on Krishna Kanamrita, And he asked Lord Chaitanya, who was his disciple. I'm going to get the details of the whole story, I'll just tell it briefly. He was telling his disciple, Lord Chaitanya, Nimai Pandit, now you correct us. What? Okay, anyway, I'm getting some help here, but, yeah, okay. Tell me the story. You tell the story. Yeah, what is it? Yeah. But what was the point where he wouldn't... But that was after. Okay, so anyway, it was before he took. Thank you. I'm getting, there's people here that are helping me with it. By the way, Piyari Mohan gave me a suggestion for the class, which I will do. From now on, we'll have time for some questions. So he, before he, I don't really remember the story, but basically the point was, is before his disciple, he wouldn't correct it. Anyway, I'll get the story right next week, I'll get, because he said that it's a fault to correct such an exalted Vaishnava. So I shouldn't tell the story because I didn't really assimilate it, but... And then we had the same example with Sridhar. So anyway, I'm going to go on. So some of the books compiled by Sanatana Goswami were the Hari Bhakti Vilas, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So this is their contribution. I guess that, please come. Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is a wonderful book. It's by a collect, because one of the instructions, because Prabhu Agyai, it's mentioned too on the order of Sri Chaitanya, they came to Braj. So they had different services, and one of the services was to compile a book on Vaishnava behavior. So the Hari Bhakti Vilas has so many subject matters, description of samskaras, the application of tilak, how to sit for meditation. There are descriptions of breathing exercises, worshiping the deity, how to set up incense, lamps, garlands, so many different things. All these chapters about the chapters on the holy name, committing offenses, chapters on a codicy, the proper ways to a codicy. The different forms of Vishnu, how to worship them, discussing the establishment of a deity, the Pran Pratishtha ceremony, how do you establish the deity? So many different subject matters are given. So he wrote the Hari Bhakti Vilas and the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that's out by the BBT, which is the essence of devotional service. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita begins after Maharaj Cricket heard the Bhagavatam. And the message of the Bhagavatam is to focus your mind on Krishna. So he was ready to, because he only had 7 days to live, and he just heard after the seventh day, so very, very quickly he knew he didn't have much time, so he was ready now. Of course, hearing the Bhagavatam itself is non-different than associating with Krishna. And therefore, Maharaj Prickett, when he heard the Bhagavatam, he understood that Krishna had appeared to him at the end. He saw the mercy of Krishna in two forms. When he was about to die, he saw the devotees. And he understood, leave the body, he understood the devotees are here, Krishna has manifested mercy. That's the mercy of Krishna. The mercy of Krishna is that you get sadhu sangha. So he saw all the great saints and devotees, And then he heard the message, which is none different than Krishna. And because he was directly associating with Krishna, after he heard the Bhagavatam, you know, he was just ready to just absorb himself in the essential message of the Bhagavatam. Param Satyam Dhimahi, that you should meditate on the Param Satyam. And then the whole Bhagavatam is spoken up until the 10th canto so that you can hear Krishna. Param Satyam Dhimahi, you can meditate on that supreme absolute truth without prejudice. And there's two prejudices in hearing that prevents us from hearing things as they are spoken. There's the prejudice of misconception, and there's the prejudice of attachment. So when you study the Bhagavatam systematically, you become purified in heart and free from misconceptions, and then you can meditate, Param Satyam Dhimahi, you can meditate on that supreme absolute truth. And when you hear the pastimes of Krishna in the 12th canto, you will hear the absolute truth without projecting any mundane conceptions on it or without projecting any mundane attachments on it. If you project mundane attachments on the absolute reality, which is Radha and Krishna, then you will see it as mundane sex life. If you project misconceptions, material misconception on the absolute truth, you will see it as mythology. So to actually see the pastimes of Radha and Krishna without prejudice, without misconception, without material attachment, without seeing it in any way as mythological, even subtly, or seeing it as mundane, even subtly, you hear the whole Bhagavatam systematically. So he was ready now to fully meditate on the Param Satyam and have that come into his consciousness purely. And just about as he's about to do that, then his mother came. And he felt indebted to his mother, and she was so enlivened, what did you hear, that he had to explain quickly to his mother, not in the 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, the 223 chapters of the Bhagavatam. We had Bhagavatam with the, he had to explain the essence of this teaching. So we have the Bhagavatam, and I believe one of the first books that was written was the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which explains the essence of the Bhagavatam. So this is the contribution of Sanatan Goswami. And also, a Sabha Granta Koila Goshani Sanatana Rupa Gosani Koila Yata Ke Karugana. We have already given the names of four books compiled by Sanatan Goswami. Similarly, Rupa Goswami has compiled many books which no one can even count. Pradhan Pradhan Kichu Koriya Banana Laksha Grante Koila Vraja Vilas Varnana. I shall therefore enumerate the chief books compiled by Srila Rupa Goswami. He has described the pastimes of Krishna in 100,000 verses. How wonderful. Raksamita Sindhu Arvadhagda Madhava Ujjwala Nilamani Arvita Madhava. The books compiled by Rupa Goswami includes, he'll give the prominent ones, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhava, Ujjvila Nilamani, and Lalita Madhava. I'm actually on my way to New York. I don't have so much time. I'm going to end soon, but before that, I'd like to share with you a realization that I had. And I was chanting. And I was meditating on the word Namashraya, that we have to take shelter of the holy name. So I started to think, what is shelter? Shelter is where your needs are met. And what is our greatest need? The greatest need is not the things. Our greatest need is to feel satisfaction in the heart. And to feel satisfaction in the heart, our heart must feel unlimited love. And to feel unlimited love, we require a worthy object of love that is both real and eternal, and who can perfectly reciprocate our love. So I was understanding from our philosophy that that shelter, who can actually satisfy the innermost needs of our heart, is the Supreme Absolute Reality, Sri Krishna. And that Sri Krishna is appearing in the form of his name, which is Nidra Sarva Shaktis. It has unlimited potency, and therefore it's non-different from Krishna. So when I was chanting, I was trying more and more to understand that this is it. This is the shelter. This is what will ultimately satisfy the needs of my heart. And that faith means this confidence, that by taking shelter of Krishna as the object of love, which can satisfy my heart with unlimited love, which is the nature of soul, is my shelter. And then what I began to meditate on is how many things I have faith in to give me satisfaction in heart that are only an illusion, that they don't actually satisfy my heart, which means my attachment. There's so many things, unfortunately, there are so many things that I am attached to and attracted to. There's so many objects, so many things that I'm thinking, when you really, really have faith, the trust in something sublime, your faith is that Krishna and the holy name is the actual object, the actual thing that will actually satisfy by the heart. But I'm just thinking, you know, and look at all the things that we have. Do we have a faith in a computer and what's on the computer and what we get from the computer? Do we actually have the consciousness? Yes, this will satisfy by my heart. Or some sensual experience or some mundane relate. What will actually, so one who actually has faith. And I was praying, and we should actually pray to the holy name in that way, that let me actually realize this, that this is actually my shelter. And I thought, in devotional service, if I want to deepen my faith in the holy name, actually I have to become free from anarthas. And what is anartha? Those things which have no value to pursuing bhakti and the absolute reality. And then I was thinking, how many things I feel have artha or value that are actually anartha, have no value. So I'm praying, and I'm chanting in this manner, trying to chant with sharanagata, with taking shelter. And there are symptoms of that. And what is the symptom? One of the symptoms is I do what's favorable for my loving relationship with Krishna, because I believe that is the shelter. That's one of the symptoms of taking shelter. I give up those things that are unfavorable to developing my loving relationship with Krishna. That's the symptom of faith. There's six symptoms of sharanagata or taking shelter. But the angi, or the main one, is this conception that my needs will be completely met by taking shelter of Krishna in the holy name. And then the others are symptoms of that. And humility. That I am satisfied in heart that there is an absolute reality, Sri Krishna, who is the shelter. Because taking shelter is a real expression of dainya or humility. Even what we say, where do people live when they're homeless? If they're lucky, they get a shelter. So to actually be happy that I am in need, that's the platform of a beggar. Begging for the holy name. I am in need. I am Dina. I am poor. Krishna becomes very attracted to that consciousness and heart. Becomes very attracted when you actually realize it's actually seeing reality. And what is reality? I'm just an energetic part of Krishna. And everything is His. And all my needs and everything I have are supplied by Him. So another symptom of our faith, our taking shelter, is humility. There's six symptoms. So we should chant in that mode. Now, I'm going to stop now because I have to go. I hope in the future I can cover more verses, but I'm trying to balance this traveling with scholarship. It's a little difficult. I'll leave in today. I'll see. Are there any questions?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Hello. Mohammed.
Hi. Yeah. This is a good idea for questions. Yes.
I can ask them?
Yes, please.
In earlier you were talking about humility, and you also, I think, tied it into gratitude. Actually, later I think you tied it into gratitude about like appreciating the gifts of the parampara and what we've been given. In my experience, sometimes I find that it's one way to avoid feeling kind of like genuine remorse for one's own lack of spiritual intensity or attachments is to compare oneself to kind of ordinary people and think, well, at least, look, I'm doing all this, or I've done this so far, or I haven't completely, screwed up in some way or whatever. How to avoid the tendency to kind of rationalize our weaknesses in the light of the fact that by Krishna's mercy, even however deficient we are, in many ways we're far better off than we were before, and in many ways better off than people we really know.
Okay, somehow the connection wasn't so good. I'll say something if I don't really complete it, but I'd really like to thank Piyari Mohan, because when I told him about this sangha, the first thing he said is, are there any questions? And I said, well, no. And then he said, why? And I just realized, it's a fear of technology, When I was calling from Vrindavan, I was just so nervous that the phone wouldn't go off, and that what would the remote button do, and, whatever the case is. But it's just a simple thing. So, and I know even people tell me they're not on the sangha because it looked too complicated. So some people don't have that sense of technology. But I didn't really hear you so clearly, but what I'm going to say is that you may have to repeat the question, but it's interesting. This rationalization, I describe rationalization is intelligence in service of the false ego. The false ego is, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So the intelligence, when it's serving the false ego, it will look in every way possible to justify any mistakes we make, to cover up any sense that our acting according to false ego is wrong. It's also, someone told me this, it's a very interesting analysis, that lust attacks the senses, the mind, intelligence. When lust attacks the intelligence, it's called rationalization. So how do you avoid rationalization? I think the first thing is you have to sincerely desire to be a servant of Krishna. You have to associate with those who are servants of Krishna. And you have to hear the philosophy of service to Krishna. So that it's really forefront of your consciousness, your desire for service and humility. In a general sense, just by practicing devotional service properly, I would say just by sitting in one place, having a time and a place for chanting, and actually focusing on Krishna and the holy name and developing attraction for him and developing therefore a desire to serve him and therefore developing the real ego that I am a servant of Krishna. Then if you develop the real ego, I am a servant of Krishna, then the false ego is eradicated. And therefore, it's the false ego that is plundering the intelligence. So if you're doing this, if you're rationalizing things, it's only because you're not in the conception that I am a servant. And you're allowing the conception that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer to be extremely active. And therefore, it'll plunder the intelligence, it'll plunder the mind, it'll plunder the senses. So I think that's one thing. It's just a general concept that at least you can tack it from the mood. If you develop the mood, the core mood, I am a servant of Krishna, that will protect you. And the other thing is to by rational discourse and hearing the philosophy, to kind of get a perspective, kind of like to be able to abstract. Philosophy allows you to abstract yourself. So you can actually watch this and understand what's going on, because it's almost like a knee-jerk reaction to. I was reading the stories, The Wives of the Brahmins Blessed, and how the Brahmins became so remorseful when they realized how they, due to their ritualistic understanding of religion, they had rejected the direct service of Krishna, and how they saw their wives actually achieve the perfection of religion with ecstatic symptoms, and they became remorseful. And at that point, when I analyzed the word remorseful in Sanskrit, one of the components was tapa, and tapa means austerity. And what's austerity? Or atonement. When you act according to the false ego, and therefore you overstep religious principles, then you undergo some self-punishment for it, which you associate with the false ego, and it inspires you to give up that consciousness. I thought as a Vaishnava, I also had a realization, I was chanting, and then I started to think back to something I did wrong. And then when I was thinking back to something I was doing wrong, then all of a sudden I was actually watching my perverted intelligence trying to rationalize it, saying, oh, this is only circumstantial, everyone does it. You know, these are all voices of the intelligence, which is controlled by the false ego. Everyone does it. It was only circumstance. And wanting to advance in Krishna consciousness and have the heat of remorse burn my false ego, I stopped it. And I'm trying to develop that practice, that when the pain of remorse comes, when I look back on my life and activities of false ego, to let it come, because tapa, which means remorse, which means austerity, it also means heat. Let it burn my false ego. So I think there's no substitute for the general conception. Take sadhu sangha. We have to pray for the association of devotees so that we can hear about the realized platform and become attracted to it. So I think in answer to your question, how not to rationalize, you know, looking at people in order, oh, they do this also, is just one aspect of it. But it's all the intelligence and the service of the false ego. Mahamuni, did that answer your question?
Oh, absolutely, Maharaj. I really appreciate it.
Great. I'm going to thank Pierre Mohan again. He's probably maybe listening in the next room. This is a great idea, having questions. Anybody else like to ask questions? Okay, it's also almost finished, because I'll do one more thing. Nice to hear from you, Mahamuni. Thank you so much. So in the future, we're going to save 15 minutes for questions, and I really, it's a good way for this to go. I have no idea why I never did this before, and that shows you how it's good to associate with devotees, because when I explained to Pierre what was happening, he just said, why not questions? I had no answer. Anybody like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, once again.
Hi, Gail. So nice to hear from you. Good. Anybody else? Go ahead, Gail.
Well, I do have a question that's been bothering me for a long time, but I'm not so sure that, you know, it wasn't directly related to your discussion today.
Well, if it's not a simple question, yeah, it's kind of towards the end right now. Maybe I'll answer that some other time. Is that okay?
You said if it's not a spiritual question?
No, no, if it's not a simple one, because I know your questions.
Oh.
And I kind of get a sense it's already 11 o'clock. Okay, ask your question. Go ahead, Gail, and then I'll end.
Okay, our love for Krishna is supposed to be unconditional. It's not motivated even by our qualities. You know, the gopis, they love Krishna like it's suggested in the last verse of the Sikshastram. They love Krishna no matter how he is, no matter his, you know, no matter what behavior.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know,
yeah.
So, I mean, if even Krishna were to exhibit some malicious qualities,
yeah,
I mean, that wouldn't be Krishna, but they would still love him because it's not...
Okay. I understand your question. Can I answer?
And so, no. And so, I'm wondering what is it that exists, what comprises a person's personality beyond their qualities that we would love them even independent of their qualities?
Okay.
You know, I'll give you another evidence of this. It's the Brahma Vimohan Leela, where the mothers of the sons that he was impersonating.
Yeah.
You know, he impersonated them exactly, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there was no difference between their sons and he. But they had more attraction to their sons that were actually Krishna because those sons were Krishna. And so that gives evidence that there is something beyond the person's qualities that makes them lovable, you know?
Okay, let me answer the question quickly, but... In terms of Brahman Vimoha Leela, and I doubt if I have time to really answer it completely satisfactorily, but in terms of Brahman Vimoha Leela, there was a difference. It's just that Krishna is the master of all mystic powers, so he can take the substance. He can take the substance of Shaktiman, the possessor of all potency, and do what he wants with it. So he completely duplicated those cowherd boys. But it was a duplication of the cowherd boys exactly, made by the potency of that total absolute reality, and not an expansion of that absolute reality, or not a shakti or potency of that absolute reality. And therefore, although they had the exact same qualities, it was Krishna manifest in their form. And therefore, there was a subtle difference, which may be inconceivable, but there is, at least we can understand there's a subtle difference. In terms of loving Krishna,
mm-hmm.
I have to answer the other part of the question.
Yeah, but that's what I wanted to understand. What is that difference? What is a person beyond their qualities?
What? Anyway, I just explained that Krishna can do anything, and he can manifest in any way. It's not just the person's beyond their qualities, but it's the composition of that person. In terms of Brahma Vimoha Leela, it was Krishna in that person. And because Krishna has inconceivable potency, he can exactly duplicate that person. It's Krishna and not those persons. And what is it? It's the complete Advayam Gyan. It's a complete consciousness of nothing is different from. So that's the difference. And the cowherd boys are not Advayam Gyan. They're not the consciousness of which everything is different from. They're a differentiated part of that consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they're not all attractive. So there is something, and it's something subtle. But in terms of your question, in terms of the attraction for Krishna, what it is yes, there is something that inspired their love. And what inspired their love is Krishna, who's all attractive. Which and he does inspire their love. There is a cause. There is a cause. His wonderful, incredible qualities of Krishna. He's the most loving person who can fully manifest his heart in the most beautiful way, in the most variety of ways, to unlimited relationships. That's Krishna. So that's who they love. Now that they have that love for Krishna eternally, it's causeless, and it doesn't matter what Krishna does. But you can't make the point, well, can he not become, can, well, can they love him if he no longer becomes Krishna? He is Krishna eternally. And therefore you become, these questions, they'll come to a point of absurdity. Can Krishna not become Krishna? Krishna is Krishna. And no matter what he does as Krishna, because they have unconditional love inspired by Krishna, there's nothing to stop it because it has no cause. To stop something, you have to find the cause. Love has no cause.
There's not,
when you act, what? If you, when you actually have love, mm-hmm. for someone, when you actually have love for someone, it has no cause. But initially, the way you get that love is you're attracted to someone. But if the love comes in your heart and it's actually love for that person, then it's causeless. And there's no way to stop it. Because to stop something, you have to find its cause. And love is not done for any motive. You're not loving someone for any reason beyond itself. Okay, we'll speak about that more, but I actually have to go because I'm on my way to New York. Jai.
Well, thank you very much, Maharaj.
Vanshakalpa, Tarubya, Stra, Kripa, Sindhu, Devi, Vichai.